Test, 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 test. Well, I'm here with Jim Davenport, and basically I explained to you, I'm interviewing you on behalf of the Society for American Baseball Research. We're going to submit this paper to all of our town and make it available to other Sabre members for research purposes. So, good morning.
Very good, Ed. Good morning to you.
Happy to have you be talking to you. I guess I usually start out at the beginning with everybody. And my first question is, do you remember the instant that you thought or you considered the fact that you might be able to play a career in Major League Baseball?
Well, I think so. You know, I went to college down in Southern Mississippi on a football scholarship, Ed, and going down there, I wanted to be a high school football coach. That's what was my plan. So, but I'd played high school ball there, and I'd played semi-pro ball before I went to college. And I played on the college team there. We didn't have signed players or scholarship baseball players at that time in Southern. Most of them were football, basketball players that played baseball. But after a couple of years, scouts got to talk to me, and I said, well, you know, I'd had one kid at the time. I got married in 11th grade in high school and still married to the same wife. And I said, well, you know, I'll sign baseball my senior year of football and give it 3 years and see where I'm going to go in baseball. And if I don't, you know, progress in baseball in 3 years, I'll go back to get a job and try to coach high school football. So luckily, you know, it turned out great for us the 3 years.
Now, you were a quarterback?
Right. I went to college on a quarterback. I was a quarterback in 52, 3, and 4 at the University of Southern Mississippi.
Now, do you think you could have taken that further if you wanted to? Maybe play?
I don't think so. And, you know, I was very fortunate, I think, to play college ball. But, no, I wasn't good enough, and I could have went on and played pro ball. I think I was very fortunate that I got a chance to be a starting quarterback. We were fortunate enough to go to a couple of Sun Bowl.
Oh, you went to a bowl game?
Two Sun Bowls, 52 and 3. So, you know, I was very fortunate because I was surrounded by some good players, I think, at University of Southern Mississippi. At that time, it was a college. Now it's a University of Southern Mississippi. It was a college at that time.
That's great. And then you caught the eye of Dickie Martin, who was scouting for the New York Giants.
Right. I came back to Birmingham. Did not know Dickie before them. I was playing with a semi-pro team in Birmingham there in the summertime, and Dickie Martin offered me a contract. And, you know, like I said, it was at that time, if you got over $5,000, you had to come with a big club for 2 years. So luckily, I got $4,999, Ed. But, you know, of course, at that time in 50, that was in 60, that was in 55. That was an awful lot of money at that time for an old Southern boy like myself. So, but I signed and went to C ball my first year and had a good year in C ball. Then I went to Double A second year, then Triple A, then came with a Giant.
So in 56, you played Double A at Dallas.
Right.
What do you remember about that?
Enjoyed. I had a good year. Enjoyed the Dallas. I was with a fella. Red Davis, it managed me in Double A and Triple A ball, and it was a good league. At that time, Dallas club owned some of their players. Some of the players we had on the team were not owned by the San Francisco Giants, so it was a few older players. Some of them had been there 2 or 3 years, and a few college older players. So it was a good learning experience for me.
What was the stadium that you played at there?
It was.
What was it like?
It was a good stadium. It was a good Double A stadium at that time. It was a very good league at that time, and it was Dallas had a fairly, I think, a new stadium at that time. But it was a very good stadium.
And then you went to Triple A with the Minneapolis Millers.
Right. In 57, I played Triple A ball in Minneapolis and had a good year. Then, very fortunately, I got a chance to come to spring training with the San Francisco Giants. And me and Leonard Cepeda was played on the same ball club.
Right.
So we were rookies at the same time coming to San Francisco.
Who else played with you on the Millers?
Well, we had, of course, Ed Bursu was with us for a short period of time. He had come down with Johnson. He went back to New York with New York Giants at that time. But we had some ex-Major League ball players. It was on that time, but none of them really, I think most of them, it was coming down instead of going up. At
Ralph
time.
Branca?
No, he wasn't on that ball club.
I know he
club,
played
but,
for
the Stan Wim, we played against St. Paul, Stan Wim, some of those type of players that later played with the Dodgers. And, of course, Bob Gibson was with Omaha. There was a lot, an awful lot of good players in that league at that time.
When you were with the Millers?
Right, when it was in AAA ball. That wasn't much fun then either.
And who was the manager?
Red Davis was my manager again in AA ball. He had went to AAA ball, which was very good for me because he knew me from AA ball and knew what I could and could not do. So it turned out real well for me, being having the same manager I'd had the year before.
And then in 58, you came up. Did you know that you were going to, you have a feeling you were going to make the team? Did you play real well in spring training?
Not really. Of course, I talked to somebody. I think they probably went back to New York. It might have been a different situation had they went back to New York. But coming to San Francisco, with a new city, they wanted to bring some young kids. So we brought about three or four rookies. Me, Cepeda, I think Bob Smith, the catcher. Willie Kirkland was a rookie, I think, at that time. So we had a few younger players. And I think for me, it was probably good because Bill Rigney was a manager. And being an infielder, he was an outstanding infielder and a very outstanding manager. He kind of helped me a lot. And I think one of my best traits was I could catch the ball and I knew how to play situation type of baseball, and I think that's what helped me make the ball club that spring.
So who were you competing with for that?
Well, at that time we had Ray Jablonski, which was a 300 hitter coming out of New York, and he was a little older, so he could hit. He was not an outstanding fielder, but he was a good hitter, so I think he got traded later that spring after, I guess, they had a chance to see me and see that I did have a chance to start for the Giants that year.
So you must have been thrilled to be the starter opening day of the new San Francisco. Tell me about the parade and the hoopla.
Well, it was. You know, of course, I come from a little town in Alabama about the two blocks there in San Francisco. But it was exciting, no question about it, to be with guys like Hank Sire, Willie Mays, all of them type of players. It was great to be alongside of those type of players. So it was exciting, no question about it, for myself.
And so the first 3 years, the Giants played in Seal Stadium.
Exactly right. Before Cal State Park was built, we played in Seal Stadium, which was a good stadium. It was not a real large stadium. I think it seated about 25,000, but it was, the playing field was outstanding.
And it was kind of unique, and they had a bakery there and a brewery right there.
Right, it was. It was kind of, of course, San Francisco has always been a good baseball town because it was the AAA ballpark, which was San Francisco Seals, I think, at that time was the AAA ballpark before we came there. But it was an outstanding stadium, and it was in, like I say, a unique situation. It was situated in a little different atmosphere.
Well, that's unique because, there's not many players that got to play on a new team. I mean, it moved, but still, for all practical purposes, it was like playing a new team in a new city.
Well, it was. Of course, I think any time you move to a new city, it's exciting because all the fans, they've never seen a major league ball club for any period of time in San Francisco. So, and they were a great fan. They really were, and they knew baseball, and they was excited to see the Giants come to San Francisco. So I think everything, turned out, great, and it certainly has been great since then.
And then the first game was at Seal Stadium, and you beat the Dodgers, I guess, 8-0, I think.
Right,
like
we did. Don Drysdale was a starting pitcher for the Dodgers, and Ruben Gomez was our starting pitcher. He'd come out of New York, and of course, like I say, it was certainly very exciting. I can remember my first time at bat. I struck out the first time at bat against Don Drysdale. And, of course, as we well know, he was a great pitcher and a Hall of Fame pitcher. But You know, I said, this will be a little tough row to hoe, but fortunately I wound up getting two base hits in that ball.
Now, had you, was the Giants-Dodgers rivalry new to you? I mean, you didn't know about that until you got there, right?
No, I really didn't know it. Of course, I'd heard the players, of course, Dodgers coming there, being in L.A., you certainly wanted to beat them, no question about it. But I think the intents of the rivalry that came out of New York certainly carried over in the Bay Area, because we had some knockdown dragouts and always good games with the Dodgers. We, when you put that uniform on, we went toe-to-toe with them. But off the field, a lot of the guys that I knew later were certainly, good friends of mine off the field. But when we put the uniform on, I think that rivalry out of New York certainly carried over in the West Coast.
Who were some of the Dodger guys that you were more friendly with?
Well, of course, I got to know Koufax real well.
And, oh, really?
And Ron Fairley and some of those. And I played against a couple of them in Triple-A ball at St. Paul. Stan Williams, of course, we still scout together. But, we'd see this. We never was, buddies when we played. I'm talking about in the 50s and late 50s and early 60s. But you got to know them, and they were certainly a lot different off the field than we were on the field.
What was Koufax like? They say really quiet.
Great, great person, and certainly a great outstanding pitcher, but a great person on and off the field. He was one of the finest gentlemen I think that I've ever had the pleasure of talking to and meeting, and still is being acquainted with him. He's just an outstanding person.
He said he could have been a major star in the NBA.
I don't know about that, but
like Jerry West, they said he was a great basketball.
Of course, I don't think he would have gave up his career in baseball unfortunately, the man didn't get, to have a real long career. You know, tell what he might have done if he'd have been healthy and could have pitched another 5 or 10 years.
I wonder what your career batting average was against him.
It probably was not too good. I don't think anybody's was too good, but it was a challenge to hit against him, because I always looked forward to to hitting off him. That wasn't the case with Drysdale, because I think Drysdale was certainly a meaner type of pitcher. That was his business. I mean, he'd probably knock his mother down if he thought it would give him an advantage, but that was Drysdale, and certainly was not Koufax.
We're kind of jumping, but since we're talking about Koufax, you were there when the big fight, considered probably the most famous fight in baseball history, when he...
I was the next hitter. Ed.
Oh,
I was
on deck
hitter, and unfortunately, it happened. And of course, I think both sides, of course, Mearsheff felt as bad about it later as anybody could ever feel. Is this one of those quick, intense moments that somebody loses their temper with a bat in the hand? And I think that's what happened. Of course, later Mearsheff went down, and him and Roseberry certainly was a pitcher on that. And it was just one of those things, and that was the intense battles we had with the Dodgers, at that time.
So what did you do when it happened? Did you run out there? Were you?
Well, I can't remember, of course, everybody come off the bench, but it was just...
Willie and Sandy were both, Willie Mays and Sandy Koufax were right in the middle there.
Right, I think, because Sandy was pitching. He was a pitcher on that game, and, I can't remember, what happened. Of course, players, of course, you never, when I was a coach, you always trying to break up, never that, but I don't remember. I certainly didn't get into it with no Dodger at that time.
Now, let's go back. So then after playing three with the Dodgers, then you went and played three in L.A.?
I can't remember now how that.
But what was the one game everybody talks about where you missed third base?
I was in L.A., and I knew I'd missed third base. Herman Franks was the coach, and it was one of those times that I was on second base. They hit a fly ball in the center fielder, and you kind of drift back looking at the ball, see where he's going to catch it or not. And I got too far on the infield, which I had to make a short turn at third base to touch third base. And I knew I'd missed third base. And Herman Franks just kept saying, keep going, keep going. So, I kept going, but I knew when I rounded third base, I had missed third base because I'd got too far in the infield and didn't make couldn't get a wide enough turn after the ball fell in the outfield. But it was, they said, well, of all the people, third baseman should know where third base is at. But we had some,
So awful
good game with the Dodgers. A little everything, I think, some of the Dodger games that happened in the Dodgers. But, you know, we had some awful exciting games with the Dodgers.
So what was that team like in 58? Was that...
And we had a good team.
Very young, very young.
We had a young team, but we played good. I think we were contenders up for a long time that year. I don't remember exactly what our record was, but we had I think we were in contention, you know, for a long time with the young kids that we had on that ball club that year.
So that was the beginning of 13 seasons or 12 seasons?
13 seasons.
13 seasons. I played with the Giants.
1970 was my last year of play. But we had some good teams because it was just one division at that time. And I never played where you had the different divisions. So, and we were winning, you know, 90-something games just about every year. But every year some team would win a few more games with us. I think we finished second 7 times out of 13 years that I played, which is a pretty good record when you got one division. Then we won in 62. Of course, we had to win 103 ball games in 62 in the playoff for the Dodgers
to
get into the World Series.
So that first year, you were a great fielder, and you hit 256, 12 home runs, 41 RBIs. And the next 3 years, 59 to 61, you led the National League third baseman in fielding. Now, what do you think? Why are you such a good fielder?
I don't know, Ed. I always enjoyed it. I remember in high school, I always enjoyed taking ground balls. I really don't know, you know, I guess not that it came natural because I worked at it. I really did because, you know, maybe I should have worked on my hitting a little more, but I worked at it, of course, and I took a lot of pride in playing defense. A lot of guys, you know, hitting, but I knew that I had to catch the ball if I was going to play in the big leagues. Like I say, I knew I could bunt, I could hit and run, I could do the little things, but I was not going to hit for a high average or knock in an awful lot of runs or hit a home run, but I knew I had to catch the ball. So, you know, and fortunately, I could catch the ball.
Well, what I've heard is a lot of people say you're a really smart player. You positioned yourself well, and you know.
Well, I think
you didn't make dumb mistakes.
I think I knew how to play. Of course, when we went over a hitter, I think I remembered how we was going to pitch him and how the pitcher was trying to pitch him, and I would kind of position myself like that. And when I first came up as a rookie, I talked to a lot of third basemen. I picked Ken Boyer's mind, Eddie Matthews. I would ask them questions, and they helped me an awful lot of giving me answers of how to play in different situations. So I wasn't bashful to ask for help or try to pick other third baseman's mind.
In your playing days and in your managing coaching days, who was the best third baseman you ever saw, fielding-wise?
Well, there were some good ones, I think. Of course, Ken Boyer was a good third baseman. Ron Santo was a good third baseman. They were an awful lot. Of course, Matthews was a good all-around third baseman. He wasn't a fielder, a third baseman, but... You know, I would have to say that it's Santo and Boyer. They were good third basemen, no question about that, that I saw in the National League. I never saw, you know, the good third basemen in the American League.
And I guess I read somewhere that Hank Sawyer kind of became your...
Hank Sawyer, he was like a father to me. We were awful close because when I came as a rookie, of course, Hank was finishing up his career. He was about 41 or 2 years old at that time when I came to Johnson. He kind of took me under his wings and, you know, said, rookie, you need to do this or do that. And he'd take me out for dinner, you know, after the ball game. So we got to be awful close even when I was a rookie. And they just carried on. And, of course, he was like a father to me. And down through all the years, we were very, very close.
Being kind of a country kid and everything, what did you think of the city of San Francisco?
Well, of course, it was an eye-opener for me, like to say, coming out of a little town in Alabama, but you know it was an experience. It was quite an experience for myself and my family coming here. Of course, my wife, we moved here and bought a little house here in '58, and of course, look, we're still here, and all our kids and grandkids are still here. But you know, it was different, no question about it, from what I was raised up in Alabama.
Well, I heard somewhere you just said you were were blessed in that you were able to stay with one team, and you didn't have to move, and your kids, and, you know, you saw, I mean, a lot of guys played for four or five, six teams in their career, you know.
I think I was very blessed because I look back my whole career. I was never optioned out. Every team that I went to in the minor leagues, I was only 3 years. I stayed with them the whole time. When I first came with the Giants, I had four kids here, and my fifth kid was born out here in San Francisco. So it would have been tough for me to move, and I feel very, very lucky and fortunate that I never had to move. I bought a home here in 58 and kept it for a couple of years. Then I bought the house that I'm living in right now in 63 when it was built. So I've been very blessed. I've been with the Giant organization. They've been an awful good organization to me, and I think I've certainly given them everything I can in return.
That's great. And then in 58, then we go to, I wanted to ask you too, what was your first impression when you saw Mays play?
He was, of course, I had saw Willie Mays, you know, he was from Birmingham, and my dad, I'd went up, and when I was about 15 years old, of course, or 14 years old, he took me up to see the Black Barons play, and Willie was about 16 years old or something. He's playing with the Black Barons at that time. Of course, I didn't know, you know, the name, you knew Mays, but didn't know how great he was going to be. So we were kindly, you know, of course, Willie was awful good to me being from Alabama, because I remember Willie used to, he'd give me the jacket off. I had no clothes or things. I've seen him take the sport coats off and give them to me in sweaters. So he kind of took care of me in awful ways. And, of course, we still awful good friends.
Now, you know, nowadays some of the people say, like other sports writers and stuff, say he's difficult to talk to. And, I mean, why do you think they say that?
I don't know. I guess he's a little, you know, everybody says the same thing about Barry Bonds and Willie. But, you know, to me, I don't know. I mean, he was just an outstanding player and the teammates on the team. He was never no problem because he got along with everybody, Willie, when we played. The same way as McCovey and Cepeda and Marichal and all of those type players. I think we were a close-knit type of team at that time, more so than they are nowadays because everybody goes, you know, their own ways. But, you know, we'd sit around the clubhouse hour, 2 hours after the game, just talking baseball sometime when we on the road. You know, nobody had any money to go out and carouse around anything, but we just sat around the clubhouse, you know, and chat for an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, sometime after the game.
Well, in the case of Willie, you must have got to know him pretty well because, I mean, you played all 13 seasons with him, right?
I was very fortunate. Of course, I never saw an American League ball player, but Willie Mays is the greatest ball player I ever saw, I guess because I saw the things he did day in and day out. You know, he was just an outstanding player. Of course, you know, you look at Willie McCovey, the things that he accomplished. You know, I think I was very, very fortunate, very lucky to play with the type of players that I played with coming along my career. The Gaylord Perry, Juan Marichal, of course, we're talking about Hall of Famers, Cepeda, McCovey, Mays, you know, all of the Lou brothers. And you know, I was very, very lucky, I think, to be come along at that time to play with these type of players.
I wonder who the other ones that you played all 13 seasons with were. Willie Mays.
I don't think any of them. None of them,
McCovey,
I think, except
Willie.
McCovey came a couple of years after we was there. Of course, Cepeda was traded. Perry was, you know, came later at Marichal. But Mays would have been the only one that I would have played 13 years with.
And you said that you didn't like the Cepeda trade.
Well, I didn't. You know, of course. You know, he was a great player. I hate to see him go, but at that time we had Willie McCovey at first base, and both of them were great, of course, both of them Hall of Fame first basemen, and I think that was the situation we was in. We just had too many good players in certain positions at that time because we traded an awful lot of good players. Good options were traded. George Foster, Felipe Lou, just an awful lot of good players. Just didn't have room to play them all.
And they didn't really get much for them, did they?
Not really. We at that time, we got two or three guys from St. Louis for Cepeda, I think, never turned out. Ray Sadecki had won some games, but never really turned out to help the Giants. Like Cepeda went over, and he was MVP with the St. Louis Cardinals and had some great years later on. He was an awful good player.
So the first year you got there, the manager was Bill Rigney.
Right.
And then how many years did he manage?
He managed till 61. Then he was let go, and Tom Chin took over at the end of the season in 61. Then Alvin Dart came, and I think he was there 2 or 3 years, which was he was an awful good baseball manager. Then Herman Franks was one of the managers, and Clyde King was one of my managers. And I think I ended up with Charlie Fox was the last manager I played for.
So let's talk about Dark a little bit. He was a former college football player, too.
Exactly right. He went to LSU, was an outstanding halfback at LSU. And he was a good baseball player. Of course, he played hard, and he knew how to do the little things. He was one of them that it really stressed fundamentals more so than and probably him and Rigney than the other managers that I played for.
Now, some of the guys didn't like him, though. He was tough.
Well, he was, and he was he kind of, like I'm talking about, he was a one of those situation theory. If you, 1 year I can remember we had pluses and minus. If you hit and run and you did the job, you got a plus. If you didn't, you got a minus. And if you bunted the men over, you got a plus. You did the little things, I'm talking about situation baseball, you'd get a plus. If you didn't, you'd get a minus. And not because of me, but me and Willie Mays led that category, and I think Cepeda and them didn't because they were a little different type of player. They got, I think that's where they got mad at Dark, and he had some problems with that situation.
Well, they said that he, probably unfairly, they said he couldn't get along with the Latin ball players.
Well, I don't think he ever mistreated anybody I ever know, and in that situation, of course, the Cepeda was Latin ball players, and some of the things I read now, I don't remember them having controversies or not getting along with each other. I'm talking about the Lou's and Alvin, but I don't think Alvin Dark ever mistreated anybody.
And so that was the great team. I mean, that was you finally got really excellent starting pitching.
Right.
With Marischal and Pierce and Sanford and Odell.
We had good pitches to him. Exactly right that year. And that, of course, that's when we won, you know, in the Alvin, we won 103 games and played in the World Series.
Because that wasn't necessarily your best hitting year, team-wise, or was it?
I don't know. Of course, 62, you look back at everybody, that was my best year.
All-star
was in 62 and when I played the All-Star game. And I think a lot of us had good years on that team in 62, but... of course, you know, Mays, McCovey, Cepeda and them, they had good years practically every year, but...
And you had a great year. 297, 25 doubles, 5 triples, 14 home runs, slugging percentage of .456. I mean, you developed a little power.
Well, I did. Of course, I never was a home run hitter. I had to hit 14 that year, but usually I hit 5 or 6. I was never a home run type of hitter and never tried to hit home. I knew I couldn't, but I wasn't strong enough to hit home run, but I did have a decent year that year for us.
What's the one home run you remember the most in your whole career?
Yeah,
the most dramatic. Or did you ever win a game with a home run?
I doubt it. Tell you the truth, I don't remember ever walking, you know, one of the walk-off home runs. I'm pretty sure I probably didn't because I didn't hit that many home runs.
How many Hall of Fame pitchers do you think you hit a home run off?
Oh, I guess I don't ever remember hitting one off of Gibson. I hit off Koufax, Drysdale. I know I hit
Spahn.
I hit one off of Spahn. I forgot about Spahn, but I don't ever remember hitting one off of Gibson.
Do you remember hitting Grand Slam?
I only hit two Grand Slams, and they was one of them was in Cincinnati, and one of them was in New York.
How about inside the park?
No, I didn't.
That was one of Eddie's claim to fame. He hit the first inside the park in Candlestick.
Is that
right? Inside the park. And Chuck Hiller, Jose Pagan.
Right.
Tell me about the fielding of that, the double.
Well, me and Pagan, we had played the Class C ball together. You know, when I signed with the Giants and I went to El Dorado, Arkansas, Pagan was a shortstop on that ball club. And, of course, coming up, we got to know each other and certainly come with the Giants. And of course, I knew Chuck Hiller for an awful long time. He was a second baseman then, but of course, like I say, I think all of us had pretty good years in 62, even Chuck Hiller. Of course, he had the great, him and Pagan had the great World Series there, I think, as far as World Series, because I think Hiller hit a grand slam at nobody else in Nashville or something. He a grand slam and hit, but we had a good team that year. I think we had a very well balanced team that year as far as pitching, bullpen, guys that knew how to play baseball, do the little things. We had an awful good ball club that year. Well, yeah, I guess you'd have to win 103 ball games. Of course, the Dodgers did too.
Right. Now, did you? You were a leadoff man.
Right.
Did you bunt for hits a lot?
No, not really. And I didn't have great speed. Of course, I bunted, but we did not really have a good leadoff man, or I would not have been a leadoff man. I would probably hit a second would have been probably my best type of hitter because I could hit them run. I could put the ball in play. But we did not have a good a leadoff man, or I would not have been a leadoff man. But later on down the list, I think when Don Blazin game came with us, this little second baseman, he was a leadoff man. We got him out of St. Louis, and he led off. Then I later moved back down the lineup.
What did you – did you get a chance to watch the World Series?
This year?
Yeah.
I sure did,
What do you think of this guy, Juan Pierre?
Oh, I'm telling you, he's going to be a good player, isn't he? It's good to see a good young player like that play hard. Of course, I love to see anybody that it looks like they enjoy playing and plays hard, and he looks like he's going to be an outstanding one.
Yeah. Okay, and then tell me a little bit about Juan Marichal, your relationship with him.
Of course, I guess playing with him all them years, and I think he's the greatest pitcher I ever saw because I think he could get the – it didn't matter what the count was or what the pitch was, he could get the ball over the plate. He was I don't know how in the world he ever had his good of control with that high leg kick that he had, but he had outstanding control, and he was a very, very smart pitcher, very smart. He went over – when we went over the lineup, he would go over the lineup and say, this is the way I want to pitch these guys. This is the way we want to play them, and he was that good. He was that smart. And you always knew if he said we was going to pitch a hitter a certain way, you could bet you could position yourself.
Right, I was going to ask you that helped
you. To help it because he knew how to pitch it. If we was going to keep the ball outside to the right-handed hitters, I could move over a little more at third base and get off the line a little more. And you knew that with him pitching.
And he was going to invite a guy to pull and you play close.
Exactly
to him.
Right, and he was that good. He was just an outstanding and an outstanding individual. They talk about unfortunately the Roseburg incident, but Juan Marichal was a first class person on and off the field.
And then what about when you played with Gaylord Perry?
He was the most intense pitcher I believe I ever saw. And he come to beat you. I mean any way that Gaylord Perry could beat you, he was going to beat you. Of course, they talk about his spitter and all that, he mastered it. I say that. He got him in the Hall of Fame. Of course, he would have had good stuff without using the spitter, but he mastered that spitter. He could throw it for strikes, and he did, but he was the most intense pitcher I believe I've ever played with because, a lot of them rookies would get scared to death to play behind him. They made an error behind him. He liable to chew them out, but he never did do that to me or some of the veterans, but some of the rookies that played behind him sometimes were scared to death. They might make an error, but he was that intent.
He was a country boy too, wasn't he?
Right, from out of North Carolina down there somewhere. He was, I think, raised in the backer country down there on the farm, but he was an awful good pitcher, but he come to beat you, and that's the reason you love to play behind him because he never wanted to come out of a ball game, and he would pitch every 4 days, that's for sure.
Now, when you were playing third and he was pitching, did you ever know that he was throwing the spitter? Could you tell?
No, you could see the hitters how the ball acted. Yeah, you could, Ed, and you knew that, that he was going to throw it. And, of course, the umpires, he'd make some of the umpires mad sometimes. I've seen a couple of umpires come out to the mound with a towel wiping him off. He'd liable to have, the grease that time they used. I don't know, Vaseline or something. He could doctor that ball up every now and then, that's for sure.
And did you ever try to hit a spitball? Did anybody ever throw
I a never know. Not, so of course, we had guys that, that would, sink the ball or something like that. But it was like, it's tough to hit, no question about it.
Now, I was going to ask you, who did you room with those all those years?
I had different roommates. I think I roomed with Chuck Hiller was, I think first time I roomed with Harvey Keene for a while. I roomed with Hobie Landreth was one of my roommates. Joe Malfatana was one of my roommates. And I think Chuck Hiller was room with Jack Hyatt, which he's director of the now with the Giants, the farm director. He was one of our roommates. So we had kind of different roommates.
Was there much carousing?
Oh, no, I don't think so. Yeah, because nobody had, we might go out and have a beer together, but that was about it.
She were married, right?
So. Right, exactly right. No, it wasn't that, I don't think. You probably saw it more from ballplayers in them days than do nowadays, because certainly ballplayers nowadays, you better, certainly watch your P's and Q's when you're on the road, because,
everybody's watching you.
Exactly right.
So that must have been a big thrill that being that was your big year. You got to play in the All-Star game.
Right, I tell you, that was probably. I look back at my whole career, and that was probably the most satisfying moment I think I've ever had when I played in an All-Star game. I'm sitting there, and I remember I'm taking pictures. I was sitting there with Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, and those type of players, and I felt it makes you chill bumps kind of run up over when an old country boy like me that, never thought or dreamed that this would ever happen, be sitting there with those type of players.
And where did they play it that year?
At that time, it was two All-Star games. One of them was in Washington. That's when the ballpark was in Washington. Another one was in Chicago.
Oh, you got to play in both?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so how many hits did you get total?
The first game, of course, the Boyer was the third baseman. I was selected second third baseman. I went in, I think, the fifth or sixth or seventh inning and played, and I was 1-for-1 in the first ball game. Then second ball game, I turned my ankle bad taking infield in Chicago. I missed about 4 or 5 games after that. I turned my ankle. Of course, at that time you could add another player, so Matthew, he'd come back anyway, so I would have probably got to play some. But
Matthews didn't even get to play.
Not in the second ball game.
You got hurt during warm-ups.
Right. Taking infield. I turned my ankle bad.
Horrible.
Taking infield. And I had missed about 4 games the regular season after that.
Manager must not have been too happy about that.
Well, of course, like I say, we had Matthews. We had another third base because they had added Matthews, Eddie Matthews, too, at that time. So they didn't really miss me by adding Matthews.
And then in the World Series, you talked about how you just got done beating the Dodgers in the playoffs, and then here comes the Yankees, the great Yankees.
Well, it was, I think it was kind of course, we had really scuffled to beat the Dodgers, and it was kind of, not that it was a letdown against World Series, but we came up here, and I think it rained for about 3 or 4 days in San Francisco. We had to go down to Modesto and work out, and it was just kind of took a little away from it. Of course, we all looked forward to playing the Yankees, but I think we were kind of a little drained after the playoff, but we played awful good. Of course, I didn't hit nothing, but
you got a couple hits or one hit?
I think I had 3 hits. I think 3 for 20 something is all it I had, but I didn't. I played decent in the field. It was kind of a letdown. We won all the even games, they won all the odd games. It was kind of It was a great series. It was a well-pitched series, I think, on both sides. Nobody really, ran away with the thing. But it was, it was enjoyable to play against Whitey Ford, Mantle, Maris, and, Yogi and all those players. It was certainly exciting for me.
What was the media attention like and just the hoopla? I mean, it was just so much more intense in a regular season.
I think so. Of course, at that time, we didn't have about 5 sports writers that really covered us in the Bay Area. Now they probably got 15 or 20 sports writers or more. But I think it was. It was one of those that, of course, playing the Yankees and all the names on the Yankees coming out here, I think it was no question about it. It was exciting.
Do you remember the loser share?
Yes, I do. It was like $5,000-something. Winner's share is about $8,000-something. Of course, the winner's share now, of course, they got the playoffs and everything is a whole lot different than what we're talking about. Yeah. But that's one thing that's changed. I don't, envy the ball players, but gosh, you didn't think you'd ever see some of the ball players making what they're making nowadays. And that certainly don't bother me. I like to see a ball player, give 100%. I don't care what you make. And give the fans their money's worth.
Do you mind me asking what you made your last year playing?
$35,000 was most of that. And I made, of course, I get that much in meal money now. That's about it. But, of course, Mays was like $110,000. It wasn't, you know, there's a lot of difference in me and Mays, no question about it, playing, but wasn't that much difference in the salaries. You know, nowadays one guy might make $20 million, one makes $3 or $4 million. It's a whole different ball game now, but it was good money in them days. You know, everything that I have, I certainly owe to baseball and the San Francisco Giants.
You probably made more managing in 85 than you
no
made.
No question about it. That's the most, you know, I'd made the year that I managed in 85.
What did you think of that, the last game, the Bobby Richardson thing? And the...
Well, it was exciting. Of course, it happened so quick. I mean, it wasn't a great, great play. I'm sure you've seen it. I mean, the ball was kind of right at him. And, you know, the controversy is where we could not have scored on Mays' double in right field. And I'll give the Yankees credit because they hit the cutoff man. Maris went back. It was wet out there and hit the cutoff man. And, you know, everybody said, well, you know, you always say afterward he should have scored. But, you know, I don't know.
Well, you were a third base coach for a while too, right?
Right.
Would you have sent him in retrospect?
I don't know. You never know. You'd have to been looking at – you know, from Whitey Lockman was the third base coach, from what he's seen, because he had everything in front of him. And, you know, I don't know where he could or he couldn't. It's what surprises me is what followed after that, that they had first base open and elected to pitch to McCovey instead of walking McCovey and pitch to Cepeda. That kind of surprised everybody. We thought it would certainly, you know, walk McCovey and pitch to Cepeda with the right-handed pitcher. But they elected to pitch to McCovey, and, of course, it turned out. We got beat 1-0.
Yeah. Okay, you're talking about the All-Star game. You got a hit off of...
Well, look, Donovan, I remember exactly.
Dick Donovan, the Cleveland Indians.
And luckily for me, because we faced them in spring training, too, playing Cleveland, so I kind of knew... You know, I'd hit off of him before in spring training.
Then you say, check all the records for all the years you played. You got, you'd win 90 games and someone would finish ahead of you. I mean, do you look back and think, God, we should have been in more World Series than we were?
Well, and we should have. I think, of course, at that time, you take away Alvin Dark and Herman M. I think we lived and died by the home runs. We did not play real good situation baseball after Alvin left, and of course, in Rigney, but we did not play real good situation baseball. I'm talking about doing the little things to win ball games because we kind of lived and died with the home runs because we had Mays, Cepeda, McCovey, Alouz, all of those top hitters, and we, you know, we just not did not. We should have won more games, should have been in more World Series than what we were. To tell you the truth, but. Like I say, every year some ball club was winning 97, 96 ball game. We was winning 93, 94, somewhere in that range. But we had awful good years, but just not good enough.
Well, at least you can look back and say we played in a World Series. I mean, there's a lot of guys like Ernie Banks.
Right.
And Ron Santo, you know, guys like that who never even got to play.
Well, I like you're talking about, I look at an awful lot of good players was much better ball players than I was and certainly never got to play in. Ron Santo, I don't think Ron Santo. Well, of course, he's with the Cubs, like we're talking about. Ernie Banks, some of them guys are great, great ball players that never got to play. And, of course, Santo and Banks then played in the All-Star game, no question about that. They were great players. But I think playing in a World Series is certainly, you know, everybody that's ever played baseball would love to get to that level, no question about it. And it was. It's exciting. And even – more exciting nowadays if you get to the World Series because of what you earn or what you get or just everything.
Yeah. Now, when you were a player, they didn't do that much endorsements. You were
none.
Did you ever do any ads or commercials? Or?
The only thing that I did one time, I think I did a bread commercial. I think Roman Mill bread commercial and my wife, which is right behind you there, she went. They went down. When you just said, they went down and made.
Nice to meet you.
Hi.
My name's Ed.
Hi, I'm Betty.
They went down and made a commercial in L.A. Took kids down. And it was a Goulden mustard.
Goulden mustard.
A couple of kids went down to L.A. and she went down. I didn't go. They made a Goulden mustard commercial in L.A.
Fowler's Market.
Yeah. Oh. So, yeah.
I'm going to go down to Jenny's. Okay. And I'll be back because Veronica's coming with
me. Okay. All right.
Nice meeting you. And, I remember I was talking to the guy who played for the Yankees, and they said they used to give them cases of beer and cases of cigarettes.
Well, they used to give us a beer. You're right. I think St. Louis, you know, Budweiser, God, they said they every week they had a thing. But I remember they used to give us cigarettes. That's when one of our sponsors was a big cigarette thing. Every week we get a carton of cigarettes or something like that. But
did many of the players smoke?
More of them did at that time, I think. Yeah, there was quite a few of them, I think, smoked at that time, more so than they are nowadays.
Yeah. And I remember DiMaggio, you know, you read about that. A lot of people don't realize he smoked. And
yeah, a lot of ball players, I think, on the team, on our team, smoked at that time, but which you don't see too many of them smoking nowadays.
So then you, after your career in 1970, what happened that you were released? Or?
1970, no. In 1971, I managed our Triple A team. In 1971, 2 and 3, we were in Phoenix. I managed the Triple A team. I wanted to manage, so that job was open, so I went down and managed the Triple A team in 71.
So you retired, basically.
Right. After the 70 season, they offered me the job. I could have probably played another couple of years with some ball clubs as a utility, but I wanted to manage. You know, God, that was what, you know, I wanted to do after this job, you know.
That's good because, you know, one thing is you look at a lot of these ball players' careers and those last 3 or 4 years, you could throw them in the wastebasket. They just seems like a lot of guys hang on for the money. Your stats didn't drop that much off, so you were like one of those guys that got out.
Yeah, well, I didn't know.
At the right time, pretty much.
I did, I think, you know, of course, and then, like I say, I was still young enough, I think, at that time to relate to the ball players and enjoyed managing, because I enjoyed managing. You know, I enjoyed the teaching end of it, I think, as much as anything. Then in 73 and 4, or no, 74 and 5, I went to San Diego as a coach. John McNamara got the job in San Diego, and I went with him as one of his third base coach in 74 and 75. Then I came back with the Giants in 76 and stayed through 85. As a coach, of course, I managed in 85 and got released after the 85 season. Then later, 86 and 87, I went to Philadelphia as a third base coach.
And who was that? Ozark was the manager?
No, John Felsky was the manager, and of course, he got fired. Then I went to Cleveland as third base coach in 88 and 89. Doc Edwards was a manager there, and he was let go. Then I went to as a coach in 1991 with Sparky Anderson in Detroit. Then I came back with the Giants in 92 and been with them ever since.
And you were at San Jose 1 year, right?
Right, I was coach. Yeah, I went, when I came back, I went to work with the kids at San Jose. I was San Jose. Then I worked with our minor league kids, and I managed a 1 year. They fired a AAA manager about the last month. I went back and filled in for him. Then 98, I went to, back to Fresno when they moved from Phoenix to Fresno, and I knew the people in Fresno, and they wanted me to manage there, so I managed our AAA team in 98. Then I've been like a special assignment.
Was Gus O'Neill with the team?
He's still down there.
Yeah.
In fact, I saw him the other day. Gus played the golf tournament, I just tell you. I saw Ed Rousseau down there, and
yeah.
Gus was there. A kid named Tim Cullen, I don't know, he played
sure,
at Santa Clara. He was there. John Cabaret was the general manager, I think. So it worked out, which I knew all of them before, and it worked out good for me. Of course, I had an awful good team down there, too, in 98.
What young players during your coaching career did you have the pleasure to teach and work with that went on to become stars?
The player that I think I've got the most pleasure out of seeing come along is Bill Mueller. Not that I took him under the wing, but I remember the first year that Bill Mueller came with the Giants in spring training. I went down. He had an old, terrible-looking glove. I said, Bill, here's a new glove. I said, I had a Wilson glove at that time, and I said, when the Wilson people come, I will get you a contract. Of course, this boy is never – of course, he was an awful good kid and a hard worker, and, you know, you see what he's done.
Well, the American League batting title.
Right. I never thought he was that – I mean, he could put the bat on the ball, but I would have never thought he would have led the American League in hitting. But he's a very dedicated kid and worked hard at it. But I think I take as much satisfaction of working with a boy like him. And the other kid that I enjoyed, and these are third basemen primarily that I worked with, Pedro Feliz, which was the Giants. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, I had him coming up through the minor league and worked with this kid. But. Mm-hmm. You know, I just enjoy working with the minor league kids. It's a lot of satisfaction to see a kid progress from one day to the next to the next to the next in the minor league and see what their work habits is. And these kids, you don't have to make them come out and work. They're always waiting on you to come out. So it's fun and enjoyable to work with the kids in the minor league.
Now, so during those years that you were coaching with the Giants, those were some pretty bleak years.
It was. We didn't have, of course, I think I came back in one year with Dusty, I think 96, I believe, 96 or 97, came back one year. Of course, that's when they made changes. They had, I think Bobby Bonds was the hitting instructor, and I was first base coach, Wenda Kim, third base coach. And the next year, of course, Dusty wanted to bring all his, kind of made a new change, bring all some of his people in, which is understandable. And of course, being Bobby still was in the organization, that's when they offered us the special assignments in organization to stay with the organization, and we did that.
I forgot to ask you about Candlestick playing in early Candlestick when they didn't have it all enclosed, and was it a lot worse?
It was tough to play, no question about it. Of course, the wind, the people it's been there knew how to win, but the wind really affected the balls a lot. And, of course, being a home club, we had the advantage, I think, over visiting teams to come in there because we had played every day in the wind. And if one of the good players ever wanted to take a day off, it had to be in Candlestick Park because it could get colder and uncomfortable playing there. But you never thought of it that much because, hey, we couldn't play out our option and go somewhere else or change, so you did the best you can. And then and we kind of took advantage, I think, of teams because our record at Candlestick Park was awful good as a home team.
Could you see other teams come in there and be affected by the cold?
I think so, and they would. You know, a lot of them players come out in the hot weather, come in there in cold, and I don't care what time of year it was, it could be cold there at night where you'd have rubber jackets on, playing with rubber jackets, something underneath you, thing. So it was, no question about it, it was uncomfortable. But, you know, of course, it never, like I say, I think we took advantage of being the home team and knew the wind. Sometimes you see that wind could do a lot of funny things to baseballs when it went up in it sometimes. So we kind of, I think, could handle it better than the visiting clubs could.
Well, they always talk about Stu Miller getting blown off the mound in an All-Star game.
Well, that was Candlestick Park, and I guarantee when we got 5 miles from the ballpark, you could hear those flags popping out there, going to the ballpark in the afternoon or night or 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock, you could hear those flags. That's how that wind blew out there. It was. Then they kind of enclosed it, which helped some, but and it hurt, no question about it. The wind blew from left to right there, and it took a lot of home runs away from guys like Willie Mays and playing in that ballpark. It was not a good hitter for a right-handed hitter, not a good park for a right-handed hitter to play in because it had taken a lot of home runs away from him. The ball that he would hit in the left field and left center, there would have been home runs in another ballpark. And I really believe if he'd have played in the same ballpark that Aaron played in, he would have hit as many home runs as Aaron hit.
What was it like walking in there the first? Did you play exhibition games there before you actually played a real game there?
That I can't remember now. I would probably say we probably did before the season started. I'm not sure, but it could be, you know, nice out there at 11 or 1 o'clock. But when the game started at night, that wind would come up. It could change, you know, in a matter of a couple of hours. That wind could change an awful lot in a couple of hours.
And I don't know, it seemed like the crowd kind of went with the stadium. It was kind of this blue collar stadium, and the crowds could get really rowdy. Do you ever remember?
Well, it was.
I've been seeing fights.
You know, it no question about it. And gosh, the infield, the dirt. You know, we had to change the infield dirt on it. It was not a good field for infielders to play on because the wind blew, and they tried the AstroTurf, or they tried the little pea gravel or something on the infield. And every time you slide, you tear your pants up, or your skin or would get. Cut yourself sliding, but it was not a real good. Of course, we had didn't think nothing about it. I mean, because we had to play there. We could certainly, like I say, we couldn't say, "Hey, get me out of here and trade me," because I always felt like I was lucky to play there.
Were you on the team that wore those ridiculous orange spandex uniforms?
Either that or a coach. I can't remember.
What do you remember about those?
Oh,
they were like pajamas.
I mean, they sure ridiculous. Was. I'm gonna tell you, it was, of course. You know, the year that I managed, everything happened that year. They had the crab bear, mascot, which we played about like he performed, and that's just about the way things.
What do you think of the crazy crab?
That's all.
That's like, but it was so San Francisco.
That's the way our season started. Of course, they booed him. I don't know, but it was quite an experience.
And. What else? So, 85, you became the manager.
Right.
And that team was, you had some good ball players.
Well, we did. I thought we was going to have a little, we didn't have any pitching, but I thought we would hit better than what we hit that year, mm-hmm. Ed, because in the outfield, I thought I had Jeff Leonard, I had Dan Gladden, and Chili Davis in the outfield, which was three outstanding players. Yeah. It was just one of those years that nobody hit. I think the leading RBI man knocked in like 60 something runs that year, which they'd knock in more than that before All-Star game nowadays. But it was just one of those years that we did not hit. Of course, we didn't have the pitching, starting pitcher. We got, I think, Mike Krukow got hurt that year. And I thought I was going to have a decent bullpen, but Greg Minton did not have a good year. And Mike Davis, he later went on, was MVP, or Cy Young winner at San Diego, was Mark Davis, not Mike Davis, Mark right. Davis.
But then he disappeared off. I mean, he had a couple good years. Didn't he win Cy Young one year?
Right. He goes to San Diego, and he was Cy Young winner. And
he must have hurt his arm.
I don't remember, but the boy out of the bullpen pitched as good that year was Scott Gorelts. It pitched right. good for him. He did a good job, but we lost a lot of 3-2 or 2-1 ball game or 4-3 ball game. We just did not hit real good that year.
Yeah, you're pitching.
But it was a good experience. I wish I would have, you know, kind of waited a little later, and maybe I would have been a little more experienced and maybe had a little better team, and, you know, things could have turned out better. But, hey, when you get a chance to manage, sometimes, you better take it because it might not come along again.
You had some interesting guys on the team. You had Bob Brantley, of course, now.
Bob, he was a good catcher, right? We had, I was disappointed in the first baseman. We had traded Jack Clark for David Green at first base, which I didn't want Jack Clark traded. Of course, hey, I wasn't the boss that time, but, of course, me and Jack Clark got along great, and I hated to see Jack Clark go because he was an awful good player and a very, very good power hitter on the ball club, but we got a boy named David Green that didn't turn out well. We got a couple more that didn't turn out too good in the trade.
What about?
And Manny Trio was about through at second base. He was the kid we got in the shortstop. We got Uribe. He was a rookie shortstop. He played shortstop for us and later done a good job. And a boy named Chris Brown, which I was a little disappointed. He didn't have a better career.
Yeah, what was the thing about him? They said he was a malingerer, as he was always hurt.
He just didn't want to play.
He didn't?
I think he just looked for ways to get out of the lineup.
They lied about his age. He was older than
But he was the type of boy that had some ability. That's some ability. He just looked like that boy that every time something happened, he would be out of the lineup.
Did you ever try to motivate him?
I tried everything, and everybody else did, I guess, to motivate the boy. But it just, I don't know.
It's hard to believe that somebody would have that kind of talent.
I know, and he had some talent. The boy had some talent.
And, he batted 271. I think he had, the best bat team on the – but he didn't play as much, did he? Yeah, he played 131 games.
Yeah.
What happened to him after that?
I think a year or so later they traded him. After that, I think he never did really turn out to be the type of player.
And then I see Johnny LeMaster here, but he was already done, right? He had already gone through those bad years where they called him Johnny Disaster.
Because the shortstop was Uribe, I think. Right. Shortstop, right.
And what was it that I had read somewhere that they said that you had butted heads several times with Jeffrey Leonard.
I did.
What was that about?
Just not the situation. We had I can remember one situation we had Rocky Bridges. Of course, Chuck Hiller was a third base coach, got hurt in spring training. So Rocky Bridges was a third base coach. So I remember one time we was in Cincinnati or somewhere, and I don't know what happened at third base. Maybe Rocky had him come in or something. Anyway, Jeff Leonard come in and dug out, "Oh, you got to do this and that." And I said, "Oh, Jeff." I said, "All of us better look our face in the mirror. You can't blame this one man for what we're doing here. We all better look our face in the mirror and say, hey, we can do better." And we get, just one of those things. But I think what it started, Ed, too, he was very good friend with Frank Robson. Him and Frank was close. Of course, I replaced Frank Robson, and I think that didn't sit too good with Jeff to start with. So it was just one of those things that, of course, we – probably better friends right now than we ever was after that, because we talked. But it was just one of them. I think he always held it against me of taking Frank's job or something. And Jeff was a good player. He had some ability. Jeff was a good player, but he didn't. I don't know what he had that. He did not have a good year.
241.
Yeah, he did
struck out 107 times.
And RBIs, I don't know. Here's a guy that.
Yeah, nobody. They're all in the 50s and 60s.
That's what I'm talking about. Nobody knocked in any runs that year. So just one of those years. And the year before that, we'd hit pretty good. And I kept the hitting instructor. I kept Tom McGraw was a hitting instructor, and I kept him. He was one of the coaches I kept off of Frank's coaching staff because of the hitting.
Well, you had some – one thing is you had both the announcers for the Giants on your team, the current announcers, right? Kuiper and Kruko.
Oh, yeah.
Who now everybody loves them on TV and everything.
Yeah, that's right. I did have
And what were they like? I heard they were good. Kruko's a real character.
Yeah, he was. Of course, he was hurt. He didn't pitch good. He later had good years for him there. And Kuiper, of course. Kuiper was toward the end of his career. Kuiper was just, that time, I think he had, of course, he had had the bad knee and tore up his knee when he was Cleveland. But
he was he held records for being the worst power hitter in the history of baseball.
What he had, one home run. he was a good guy to have on the club, but we didn't play very well that year.
What was this thing Kruko always tells a story about? Whenever they would go to Chicago, there was a horse in the park,
still there,
and they had to paint a certain part of its anatomy
still there
orange. And did you know about this from your manager?
Oh yeah. Oh no, and I'm mad, but I know that rookies. It was always the rookies. I don't know. I never did. I guess this was handled by the players, like you're talking about. It said the rookies, this is what you got to do. This is, if you're going to stay on the ball club, you got to get some paint. I don't know whether they did or they didn't. They keep saying that. It's a big statue we pass by going from the hotel to the ballpark. Right. It's a big horse, big statue horse. But it was funny,
Did they haze you in 58?
Pardon?
Were you hazed as a rookie? They play any jokes on you and stuff?
No, I don't think so. At that time, I think rookies was treated a little different, though, Ed. Of course, you stayed in your place, sir. Nowadays, you don't know where rookies, some of them act like they got 10 or 12 years of experience, but I was afraid to open my mouth as a rookie. That's really like Hank Sauer, them kind of guys, John Natalie, Wes Westrum, we had Wes, and, we had all them. Bobby Thompson was in spring training when I was there. So we had those type of players that rookies – you stayed in your place as a rookie until somebody asked you, one of the veterans,
right,
to do something. You kind of.
And then you had Vita Blue on that team.
Yeah, I guess.
Went 8-8. What was it like working with him?
Good. I enjoyed about it. He was an outstanding person, a good pitcher about it. Yeah, he was a.
And Atlee Hammaker?
Atlee hurt it. I think he hurt his arm. Atlee, he didn't. I don't know what he.
He didn't have 5-12.
That Bill
Lasky.
Lasky. He was, I think, one of the starters. I can't remember who all.
How did you? You seem like pretty, ordinary, normal guy. How did you handle the celebrity? You mean when people come up to you in public and say hi, and we're always,
What do you? What
I'm
do you
saying,
mean?
You know, the being noticed everywhere you went.
Oh, I don't think I was noticed that much everywhere I went in,
Was it more so when you were a manager as opposed to when you were a player?
I think more so when I was a manager, probably. Yeah. But, of course, I had friends of mine ever, would come to the ball games every town I went in, but, when I was a player. But I think manager, of course, I didn't separate myself quite a bit from, after you become manager.
Did you ever see some of the coaches? When you were playing, did you ever see some of the other players and have problems with, too much attention? People would come up to them like Orlando. Most people were pretty polite.
Yeah. No, I never did all the players was pretty polite.
What were your favorite cities to visit on the road?
I don't know. I enjoyed in Chicago. I never liked New York or Philadelphia. I just, didn't like those cities. It was good the first time you go there to see New York because I'd never been or something. But Chicago, Pittsburgh, I had a lot of friends that I went to. A couple of fellas that played basketball at Southern. Lived in Pittsburgh, so I'd see him all the time. We'd kind of go out and have a beer or something after the game up there when I played.
Did you ever, what was your relationship with umpires when you were a manager?
I had a good relationship with umpires. I think the only time that I was ever thrown out of a game, I think, playing was two times, and just we laugh about it now. In fact, one of them I played golf with, Pelicudas used to live right here close to where I live right now. He threw me out of one ball game, but I got along with umpires because I respected what they had to do, and I think they respected me. And so, of course we argued, but I knew when to, that's enough. When the man tells me that's enough, I knew to stop. So I wasn't one of them that kept going because I know it's a tough job.
Seems like the umpires this year are really under fire. A lot of controversy now. They judge them and rate them.
I know. Well, they got guys that goes around now, judges them, that sit in the stand and rates up umpires. But it is. It's a tough job. I didn't mind if a guy's hustling. That's the same way players. I could never get on a player if they was hustling and get thrown out of hustling. You got to use a good common sense running bases. But if an umpire was always hustling, that never bothered me. I mean, they got to make mistakes. They're going to be sometimes at the wrong place at the wrong time to make calls, and they're not going to be right every time, and I understand that.
Did you ever have an umpire admit to you that he made a mistake?
Well, I've had an umpire say, Jim, I could have been wrong. But I said, and then what you going to say? Well, hey, I've made a lot of mistakes, and some of the umpires, some of them would not admit they made a mistake, but some would say, hey, you could be right,
Does it frustrate you nowadays when you see some of these ball players that lacking fundamentals?
When the Cubs blew it,
Sammy Sosa tries to throw home rather than.
And it does. I think that's what I guess burns me as much as anything is to see this guy not run balls out or doesn't play good. Everything nowadays, it seems like it's home runs. A ball player nowadays can hit 20, 25 home runs. He's $3-5 million a year player. I don't care what he hits for an average or what he does. If he hits 25 home runs, he's going to make a lot of money. And I think that's one thing we have kind of got away from is good fundamental baseball. I think in the American League, it plays a little different than I think the National League because the National League, they'll hit and run more. They'll bunt more because of the pitcher, I think, hitting in the ninth spot. They'll bunt more and play a little more situation baseball than I think they do in the American League.
Like they used to say sometimes Willie Mays would have an opportunity to stretch a single into a double and he'd stay at first.
Exactly right, because they would, especially with two out there, Walt McCovey. And he's done that a lot of times, you know, it like I'm talking about, it's a bad situation. And me and Bobby Buck, what Bobby's talking about, it's probably the only sport that you can take the star out of that, just like Barry Bonds, walk him intentionally. You know, the football player, you can put the football in his hand, you can put the basketball in the player's hand, but you can almost sometimes take the star out of baseball. Look at the time that Barry Bonds intentionally, they walk him or walk him intentionally, unintentionally, and, you know,
they walked him with the bases loaded one time.
Exactly right. Yeah. And how many players... And I don't think I've ever seen any players, when you lead off an inning, they intentionally walk the man.
Yeah.
I don't think I never did see it.
What's amazing to me is his discipline. I mean, he gets so few good pitches, you'd think he'd be swinging at bad pitches, but he doesn't.
He's amazing. He's amazing. And I would think that he would chase a lot of bad pitches, but he does not. Sometimes you wish he would chase a bad pitch. If I was a manager, I'd say, hey, if that thing's close, swing at it, but he won't. I mean, sometimes he looks like he's not satisfied to take a walk, but he's going to – he don't swing at many bad pitches, that's for sure.
Well, he has admitted that he's growing tired of it. It's starting to really get to him.
Oh, it does. I'm sure mentally, but, you know, I don't know how the man has as good a year as he has. The year that he hit 73 home runs, he walked about 170 times or something. If he'd walked 100 times, he might have hit 85 home runs or something. He's that good a hitter.
Have you had a chance to interact with him very much?
Oh, yeah, I see him. I'm probably as close to the Bonds family as probably anybody outside of the Bonds family. Me and Bobby were very, very close because we worked together. We played golf together before he passed away. We done everything just about together. And we live about 5 minutes apart. Right now, he lives about 5 minutes from here. But we done everything together. Of course, I've known Barry ever since he was a baby, and we play golf together, Barry, every now and then. He's a different person off the field. I mean, I can understand some of the things. He can be, you know, nice at times, and you know, according to what kind of mood sometimes he's in. But you know,
you got to realize, I mean, people don't, you know, think about it as much, about the fact that he, you know, he was a major leaguer when he was in high school.
Exactly,
I saw him play at Sarah, and he had a following. I mean, he had a following. He was a junior in high school.
Exactly right. Well, I tell people, I said, you know, when we played, you'd have four or five sports writers in the clubhouse, and now they might have 15 or 20 sports writers, and they'll say, hey, Ed, go down tonight and get an interview from Bobby Bond. Well, some of these sports writers, Ed, is not qualified to – they don't know what kind of game he had or what might have happened. They'll go down and ask him a question off the book, and he'll give them a smart answer, and then that's what happened. They say, get on, I don't want any more to talk to you. And then they go back and write something bad about him, and that happened an awful lot. But I think the man has mellowed a little in the last year or so. I think he's mellowed a little, and, you know, thinks before he says something sometimes, too, because he could be one of the greatest ball players that ever played.
Oh, yeah.
And could be. I mean, San Francisco, a lot of these, you know, the generation never saw Mays, McCovey, Cepeda, and them type of guys play. And he's an awful good player. Ain't no question about that.
Do you think they'll trade him eventually?
I don't think so. I think the boy will play. He's got 2 years and I think an option here for the third year. I would have to think if he comes close to breaking Henry Aaron's record, he'll probably play his option year, his third year, and if he wants to break it, I don't know what he will do. I don't think he'll ever go to the American League. I don't think he would ever. That would be the only thing that I would say if he wanted to play a year or two longer to go over and DH, but hey, he'd probably.
He couldn't play first, could he?
Oh, I would think he could.
Because some people are saying
I would have to say that the boy would be, because I think he's got that much ability.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, if he went through spring training at first base, I'd say the boy would be an adequate first baseman. I don't know why he wouldn't. But it might, you know, that might be his last year. So if he slows down or happens to hope, you know, that he don't nothing happen to him as far as injury-wise, but if he did have some kind of injury and they might say, hey, well, we got to take you out of the outfield, that then first base would probably be the boy's position. But,
yeah.
And again, if it happened and he couldn't, you had a first baseman, that'd be the only time I would ever say he would go to the American League as a DH.
Now, they said that being a manager, I can ask you this, I think. They said that they thought that Socha out-coached Dusty in that World Series and that Dusty made a mistake by giving the ball to Ortiz there.
Well,
I mean, do you think that is any?
Well, I think all, you know, I think everybody can always say, you know, we could say, well, what would I have done? You know, I say, well, I would have left Ortiz in till they scored some runs off Ortiz. That would have been my feeling. But, hey, every manager, you know, he's got to do what he feels is right. And, you know, and Socia done a great job managing. You know, no question about that. Socia done a great job managing. And Dusty has been a good manager. You know, you can always look back and nitpick at some of the things manager does in playoff. Like, hey.
Grady Little.
Exactly right. You know, they talk about maybe it got fired. I don't, you know, you say, well, always, but I don't know.
They said that in the later innings of the previous game, Messina was even saying that he could tell that Pedro had lost his movement and velocity.
Exactly right. I mean, you'd have to.
I would have pulled him, even if
it didn't. I agree with you. I would have, too. I mean, because I would hate to see a man, you know, pitch that good and get beat.
What do you think of all the nonsense with Zimmer?
Oh. Well, of course, that's Zimmer.
Poor old guy.
You know, I'm surprised that he charged Martinez like he did, because that doesn't like him. Of course, he was so frustrated because, like he said, he got hit in the head. He's got a plate in his head now from getting hit. And, you know, and of course, nowadays, gosh, it's not accepted to throw at you like it was in our days. I'm going to tell you. I seen Willie Mays pick himself up the ground an awful lot of times, and balls right at his head that nowadays you just don't see. I mean, but
when did they start the helmets?
I think it was a little later.
But you played a couple years without them,
right? They had that little thin piece that went around just like a half moon or three quarters shape. It wasn't much thicker than the bill of your cap, and that's about how thick it was. It went around in your helmet, and I'm surprised. Of course, I think the helmet's the greatest thing that ever happened. I'm surprised that somebody hadn't got hurt bad in the past. Mm-hmm. Of course, you expected it. Nowadays, somebody throws toward your head, you dang near hit. I mean, because you don't expect it nowadays. But I mean, when I went to the plate against Drysdale, Gibson, them kind of guys, hey, in certain situations, you better be ready to get out of the way of it, because you know, that was baseball.
Did you ever get beaned?
Not in the seat. I got hit quite a few times, but I got hit in spring training, I think, just, you know, a couple of times in the head. That's the bat practice or in the exhibition game in spring training. No, in the season, I never got hit. I got Don Dry that broke my hand in August in 62. I got my hand broke in late August in 62.
They healed pretty quick.
It did. Well, we had nobody. That was, I think I came back. Of course, I was hitting 315 or something. I got my hand broke and went up hitting 297 that year. But I had to come back and play because we really didn't have a third baseman to play in that. So I had to come back in. Fortunately, just broke a bone right in my left hand because it didn't bother me really catching the ball.
I'm almost done, but I forgot one question I was going to ask you about. Were you disappointed when you got fired as manager?
No.
Was there a lot of press saying you were going to get fired?
You know, I think, of course, a lot of the sports writers didn't, you know. Glenn Dickey was one of them. I was fired before I ever managed the first game. Glenn Dickey, of course, he fires everybody. But, I mean, that's Glenn Dickey. Yeah, I met him. Yeah.
What do you say to him now?
Every time I said, you know, after that, I said, who have you fired lately, you know? But
Tell me how they did it when they fired.
But when you lose, of course, it was Tom Howler was general manager. Because me and Tom had been good friends. We played together, Tom Howler. And I had went to Tom Howler before then. I said, Tom, we got to do something. You got to make some trades or do something. Or go down to minor league and get somebody. Cause we got to make some changes here because we're not going anywhere here. And they said, well, no, they didn't want to do it. I said, well, we're all going to get fired, that's for sure. This is before it ever happened. Of course, Bob Lurie was nice. I got no, you know, qualms against Bob Lurie because, you know, that probably, you know, they brought in, you know, new general manager. Of course, they brought in everything. They made some changes, and it worked out good for them.
Were you on the road or at home when you got fired?
I think I was home. I don't know. I can't remember now.
Was it more of a relief than anything else?
Well, I think it was at that time because, Ed, I stayed away at night. What can I do? I must have aged 10 years. What can I do to make things better? You know, I wasn't sleeping good at night. It was just one of those, you know, because, you know, I guess I just shouldered all the blame. I mean, not to that, but we just, you know. But, you know, my gosh, I just stay awake at night. What can I do tomorrow to make, see, turn around and...